Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show of At Home with Victoria, with your host, Victoria Gaither, and co-host, Michael Kay.
Everybody, and welcome to another edition of At Home with Victoria. I am Michael Kay, your entertainment co-host for tonight. As most of you know on Facebook, our lovely news lady, Victoria Gaither, is now touring the nation's capital with Michael Taylor Gray, one of the stars of Steve Silverman's web series, Pretty. And they've been uptown, downtown, in Arlington, in Crystal City, in Roslyn, traipsing around just like common trash, but having a fantastic time. We've got a great show for you tonight. Steve Silverman, the multi-award-winning actor, director, and producer, is joining us tonight from Los Angeles, as well as bringing with him, this woman deserves a fantastic introduction, but you've known her as Leslie Weber on General Hospital, as Susan Hunter Martin of Days of Our Lives. The only thing that eclipses her talent is her beauty. Denise Alexander will be joining us tonight, as well as Raven O is a consummate cabaret crooner. He is going to be in Provincetown, Massachusetts, with his partner in crime, Jody Arias, from July 6th through September 2nd at the Art House. So we'll be catching up with him and listening to his music throughout the hour. Want to go to a little bit of music? Let's go ahead and introduce you to Raven O. If you haven't heard him, you're about to. So this is Raven O with P.S. I Love You. When we get back, Steve Silverman's in the house. Don't go away.
Dear, I thought I'll drop a line. The weather's cool, the folks are fine. I'm in bed each night at 9 p.m. I love you. Yesterday we had some rain, but all in all, I can't complain. Was it dusty on the train? P.S. I love you. Right to the Browns, just as soon as you're able. They came around to call. I burned a hole in the dining room table, and let me see, I guess that's all. Nothing else for me to say, and so I'll close. Oh, by the way, everybody's thinking of you. P.S. I love you. each day feels like me. Every night I'm dreaming of you. P.S. I love you.
Raven O with P.S. I Love You. We'll be talking to Raven a little bit later in the hour. But Steve Silverman joining us now. And Steve Silverman, P.S. I love you, buddy. Thanks for joining us again.
Oh, P.S. Thanks for having me. I just wonder what you would do with Gumdrop the Unicorn. You got a great voice.
Oh, absolutely. You know, what a good idea. How have you been, my friend? What's new in your life?
A lot of things, you know. We're in the middle of season 2 of The Inn, which is first 3 episodes are up. We got 2 more to go, and then we'll take another hiatus until October and wrap things up. So that's going pretty well, and it's been a lot of fun. And we're also gearing up for Hot as Hell, the first ever fan festival for web series that's going to take place here in Palm Springs in August that I'm the co-chair on. And I've delivered my part of the bargain. It is already hot as hell here in Palm Springs, California.
Yes, I've been reading some of the clips and stuff. You guys are lucky. You're getting the heat. We had the rain. Everything was flooded here. Thank God I got back from D.C. on Monday. Everything is just underwater. But, I mean, does it really get hot in Palm Springs? I mean, it is a desert, mind you.
Yeah, we get up to, I think the hottest I've ever been here was 2 years ago we hit, I think it was 118. But I grew, you know, I went to school at the University of Arizona in Tucson, and I did a summer classes right before my senior year, and the days, there's no lie, it was about 125 outside. And it's just ridiculously hot. It's crazy. But I don't know if it's going to get that hot here for in August. It's actually cool this week. It's only 92 degrees. So,
what are you complaining about? Come on. Season 2 of The Inn is up and running, and episode 3 is actually up too. Once again, I must have to commend you on this season is really spectacular and really explaining a lot of the questions that we had in season 1. Krista Chappelle is doing fantastic in it, as well as I was really shocked to see her husband, who was cremated, appear in episode 2. That, I mean, he looks fantastic for being cremated.
He looks amazing. Well, that's the thing, is, you know, it's a classic Hitchcock modeled story, horror story, and, you know, Hitchcock was famous for having women who are your lead characters who have a face of goodness, and then we find out they're kind of dark. It's been really fun. Crystal has such a huge fan base, and it's been great because, you know, during our whole first season of February, like, all these fans of hers who were being really sweet and fun. They were saying things to, you know, on Twitter all the time, like, you know, you leave, you know, that sheriff better leave her alone. Those people better be nice to her. She's a good person. Oh, my God, dude, why are they all being so mean to her? And then we found out that she's, we're not sure whether she's lying or maybe she's drugged out of her mind or what's going on, but she hasn't been 100% truthful. And it was really funny on Twitter to watch all of Crystal's fans all of a sudden be like, wow, she's not quite telling the truth. They're like, all of a sudden, like, a little bubble was burst. I was like, it's just a character. She's not really her. we've been having a lot of fun. We got to so much of the material that you guys are seeing now, so many of the episodes you're seeing, everything you're seeing at night, we shot at 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. We're all exhausted. Wow. I commend the actors and the crew so much for sticking with me. But it's always so much fun for us to sit in the editing bay with something that we filmed back in December and look at it now and be like, oh, yeah, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh, yeah, we were standing in a horse pasture with poop under our feet. Oh, that's right, the generators went out on us at that one point. Oh, I remember, you know, you start remembering all those things. And
yeah.
And sometimes you look at footage and you say to yourself as a director, you're like, wow, I shot that better than I thought I did. And then you see another shot and you're like, wow, I did not shoot that as well as I thought I did.
Well, in season one, too, you also got to go ahead and catch members of other web series, Divanity. Michael Caruso was in. It was Michael and it was Alexis. And who else was sitting at the dining table?
Katie sat at the table
Caprio,
with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in this last episode, we had some people sitting at the counter, and that's Steve, Rob, and Tanya from Vampire, Zombie, Werewolf, and Ladies and Gents.
Right.
And then also sitting at the counter is Julie Smith, who's the creator of Fumbling for the Pieces. I was going to do a game where I was going to, offer $100 to the first person who could name everybody at the counter, because I thought Julie would be the really difficult one to name. And I was surprised at how many people were like, oh my gosh, that's Julie. And she's not an actress. She's just, I'm not an actor. We're just the people behind the camera. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A new member to the cast of The Inn is Denise Alexander she was in Pretty as well. You can catch up on all of The Inn and Pretty at www.prettytheseries.com, so go ahead and check that out. But Denise Alexander in Season 2, Episode 2, I believe, she's on to the cremated husband sitting at the diner counter and actually leads him directly to where Crystal Chappelle is staying, which I thought was, of course, a stroke of genius. But she knew what was going on, and I thought that was quite well done, Mr. Silverman.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's it's classic. I'm trying to model the shots, the angles, the style, everything I would say except the music. We've been using more popular music. We just used a cut by Shelley Rand. We just used Drew Stevens is going to pop up again in the next episode. We used him last season. We used Mary Edwards. We used My Brother again. We used Bessie Mink. But everything else I'm trying to model of the look and style of Hitchcock. And the great thing about Hitchcock is, when you watch one of the films, is when somebody turned out, the person you trusted the most turned out not to be the one you should be trusting. And then it turns out at other times the one who you think is the evil character is actually the one trying to help you. So that's kind of where we went with all that, and Denise does it very well.
Yeah. No, she certainly does. And actually, I see her. I hope this is her. She's coming up as an international number. So I'm hoping this is the ever-talented and timelessly beautiful Denise Alexander. Denise, is that you?
I love you very much, more than anybody else in all the world. Yes,
oh, honey.
It is I.
Thank
I
you
is
so
me.
Much
it's
for joining
great.
Us, Denise. Denise, it's an absolute pleasure, and this is seriously one of my bucket list interviews. So I do want to thank you so much, not only for taking the time to come out, but you actually did a fantastic job in my anniversary video with Steve, and you were so gracious with your time and your message. So just from me to you and not the other 1.6 million listeners, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You are more than welcome. We had such fun doing those for you.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute.
We've got a gardener
starting next door. I'm going to go quickly. I'm not leaving the phone. I just need to go close this window.
We were actually, Denise, if you remember, that was on Pretty. We were in my backyard where we moved all the trees around.
I had the gnome. Yes.
You wished them she wished you a very happy anniversary, and then she made a comment about her own feelings toward marriage and swore me not to say a word, and I started laughing so hard off camera because that's a long story.
Yes, I have a very long love affair which turned into a marriage, which is worth the odder people you've ever known episode. And I knew that if I talked anything about marriage, Steve would have hysterics. So,
well, Steve has hysterics at any given time. But Denise, I want to go to you for a second. Born in New York City, raised in Long Island. When did you actually make the move to Los Angeles?
I was early teens, and my dad had a talent agency in New York, and his clients were all working in Hollywood, and he came out to see Hollywood, and we were an East Coast family. I mean, both of my parents grew up on the East Coast, and as did we. And he came out. He obviously loved it. He saw the future there. he came back and said to my mother, you know, the summer vacation is coming up. You and the girls should just go. You'll have a wonderful, this great, wonderful place called the Chateau Marmont, and they've got these wonderful, they were little apartments, and it's charming, and you'll just have such fun. And she thought that would be fun, except my mother hated to fly and was exhausted because she had to hold the airplane up by the arms of the seat all the way. Oh, you didn't get that. That's our little family joke. She was a very nervous flyer. But we landed, and we had the best summer, and my dad went back, sold the house, packed up the animals, and drove across country and said, guess what, we're living here now.
Wow. Yeah, your father, Alec Alexander, who handled Sal Mineo and also Frank Gorshin, which is the Riddler from Batman, which I
That's
found
right,
very, very
yeah.
interesting. Yeah. Did they come over to the house at all? Were you actually a
Sal
traumatized
was really,
Riddler teen?
Well, no. I mean, we met all of his clients, and Frank Gorshin was still in the armed forces. I can't remember what branch when my dad discovered him, and he got him released on some kind of a short leave to come and do something in show business. And then when he left, he was an impressionist. He was a brilliant impressionist. And then he came out here. We did know him, but he was older than we were. But Sal was a kid when we were kids, and he was always spending time with our family. I think he was the son my dad didn't have, to tell you the truth.
Oh, that's sweet. You were 14 when you made your feature movie debut in John Cassavetes' film Crime in the Streets. What was it like working with John?
I had such a crush on him. He was such a beautiful man. And I was playing his girlfriend, and I was playing for probably the first and only time in my life older than I was. And it was great fun because it was my first theatrical film. And he was directing, of course. He was not yet directing is what I meant. He wasn't famous for directing. He was a wonderful actor. And playing his girlfriend was interesting, except that I spent most of the day in school because in those days you had to, if it was during the school year, which this is was shooting during the school year, you had to put in school hours and you had a school teacher until you were 16. And I remember the time that we all went for probably lunch, or maybe it was after the work day, except I remember it was daylight. And it was a very famous little cafe down on the corner, and everybody from the company was there. Not everybody, big, large group of us. And there was this stunningly beautiful blonde woman. And John came in probably later than anybody else because not for any reason. I don't know. I'm wandering off in 12 different directions here. And he stood next to the table where she was. She put her arms around his legs and leaned against his stomach, and I couldn't believe it. Well, of course, it was Jenna Rollins, who
oh,
is
really?
His wife and the great love of his life. So that was that for it. But he was a lovely man. It was a wonderful company. He was funny. He was... it was energy that just radiated him. He was, as everybody knows who's seen photos, a very beautiful young man. And I loved doing that picture, and I loved him. I loved all of the guys, and Sal was in that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was, actually. And also, this is where I kind of get confused, because you were also in a short-lived NBC radio comedy drama called The Marriage with Hugh Cronin and Jessica Tandy. Was that before or after Crime in the Streets?
Oh, that was way before. That was back in New York.
That was back in New York.
Yeah.
So let's go to New York, Miss Leslie Weber and Miss Susan Hunter Martin. Two iconic characters. Which were you most comfortable? Which was most you? Which did you actually get more
Leslie
out
Leslie
of?
Weber. No question.
Leslie Weber. Yeah.
I was really so blessed with being written for as Susan Hunter Martin, came on to do a summer arc in the story because I was in school, and I had known the Cordays from New York, actually. And I didn't really want to be acting. I wanted to go to school and college and have all that fun. And it was just going to be for the summer. So she's kind of the bad girl. And she morphed through so many different stages. And to have that kind of writing for you is wonderful. It's like somebody puts a wonderful present right in your lap. It was terrific. And I loved the people. I never took a vacation on that show because there were weekends. That was enough. You know, sometimes you had a long weekend. I loved going to work every day. I adored the company. I adored the other actors. But when I got to hospital, as that character developed, and it took a few years, really, she became more me. And, of course, I was growing up. You know, I was able to look at things differently. And it was, there was one particular time on days where I had to get up a petition which said, whereas, and it had to do with the fact that Susan never had any kissing scenes and it was time to write them. Well, when I went to hospital, I had kissing scenes. I had bed scenes. I had everything scenes. So, and I loved the character. I loved the strength of her. I loved the comedy that we got to do because Gloria, when we got to the Gloria era, loved comedy and loved people who could do comedy. So the Webbers used to, the actors of the Webbers, we used to refer to our little group as the sitcom within the drama. And to be with General Hospital, that was a more mature way of working, and to take that ride that it went on and be part of it and be a major part of it, that was pretty special. And I was there longer as well.
Can I say something? All right, I'm going to make it really quick. I won't say who. Richard, Denise's husband, Richard, is a terrific director. He's an amazing director. He's directed many, many things, including my personal favorite. He directed the pilot movie of Battlestar Galactica from the 70s. Richard was an actor at one point, and he was an actor in the very beginning of Days of Our Lives. He's actually in the very first episode, and he is so gloriously awful. He's a very handsome man to look at, but I always laugh because the Soapnet aired the very first episode of Days of Our Lives years ago, and I sat down and watched it, and I giggled through the whole thing because I'm like, there he is.
And, oh, mean. Yeah, there's your truth in there. Yeah.
He's your friend,
I have a question for you, Denise. Did you guys cross paths, you and Richard, on the show?
I came on, which was about 6 months in, Richard was the young romantic lead, and he was working primarily with Marie Cheatham and Mac and Francis, that family. And he was the doomed young romantic lead, and I was one of the teenage group. And what he will tell you is that he used to look over at us. We would rehearse in a vast rehearsal hall with tables on the sides for us to sit around while the other guys were acting. And he said his point of view was, who are these new people? And we don't need them. What are they doing here? And then I would watch him work. I remember at one point standing, I don't know if I was in the back of the control booth or just outside. The control booth had a window where we were working at NBC at that point, and thinking, oh, my God, he is so full of himself, that actor. So it was 7 years later that we met again, and it took.
That's hilarious. Denise, tell me the story of how you actually met Mr. Steve Silverman.
Oh, I love this story. I think people must know it by heart by now, but I love it. I got a call out of the blue from some kid who I guess had found out how to contact me. I have a feeling, Steve, that I was sitting out at the ranch that day, but I'm not sure about that. I think that may be the day that I read the script, actually. This kid had been an intern over at hospital and called me and said he'd written a script and he was going to do a play and he wanted me to come and do it. And I thought, yeah, okay. But I like to be helpful to young and burgeoning and new talent. You always like to do that. And he is charming. He is infinitely charming in person or on the phone. Doesn't matter. And he's funny. And I thought, oh, this is a nice guy. I'll read the script for him. So I said to him, send me the script. And It was a very bizarre and exceedingly funny script called Mother's Day, which was kind of loosely but not that much based upon his family, his mom and his dad and people he knew, and good writers always start with what they know. And it was so odd and so strange. I gave it to Richard. That's when we were sitting on the porch. I said to him, please, would you just take a look at this? I'm not going to tell you what I think. You just tell me what you think. And he read through it. I don't remember his opening exact words, but his point of view was it was really good. And he, from then on, started to refer to it as the play with something to offend everyone. It was it was a brilliant comedy, and I had just stopped working, and I was out at the ranch because, you know, I was in love, and I was trying to see what it was like to live life when you were, I've been an actor since I was a kid, and it was all I wanted, and now here was this guy, and here was a life to live that was going to be different. It wasn't going to have anything to do with acting. It was going to have to do with, and I dated and dated and dated and had romances and had boyfriends, but I never quite felt like this. And so I was in that period of saying, oh, I think I don't want to do anything. And I didn't want to hurt this kid. You know, he, again, seemed like such a nice guy, and it was a good script. And I said to him, I don't think I can commit to do this, but I tell you what I would like. It's really a good script, and I'd like to take an option on it. And I don't remember if there were other words in there, but eventually what he said to me was, I'll give you an option if you do it. And I thought, who is this punk kid from nowhere? Who can say that to me?
This baldy, bald kid.
Oh, my gosh. And yeah. I tortured him. I tormented him. I literally tortured him for weeks and weeks and weeks, so that when he was about to sit down and do his first reading of this play with the cast that he had pulled together, I was still saying to him, I don't think so, but I'll do the reading for you. Mm-hmm. And I did the reading, and it was the most delicious, most ridiculous, most bizarre, most touching play that I then went on to do whatever run it was. I know we got extended. I can't remember how long it was, at a wonderful theater out in Burbank, and had a terrific time.
Yeah. Now,
and
for those who
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. No, you go ahead, darling.
I didn't have anything that interesting. No, you go, your turn.
I want to say that I had a full head of hair, first of all.
Oh,
second of all, I want to say that that reading will go down as one of those magic moments where I got to bring together a whole group of people, and I wasn't sure if they were all going to mesh right, and it was magic. And these are actors who, many actors come to readings and they've read the script one time, two times. Some actors come and don't read the script at all and sort of futz their way through it and say, oh, yeah, I read it, wink. I've been that there too, but I'll never forget that night because it was so exciting. It was so exciting to see it all really actually come to life. And we had the most fun summer. That was 20 years ago, and actually 20 years ago this summer. And we just had a fun time. We all really enjoyed being around each other. It was a really, really fun group of people and really talented group of people.
And I did not know that. It's so lovely to hear that. That was your point of view. And the audience loved it. People roared with laughter. As I said, we got extended. And it was the best ever time.
Yeah, the critics hated it, but the audience loved it.
Oh, I don't believe the critics hated it at all. I don't want to hear if they did.
I'll show you the reviews.
No. I don't care. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know. It was wonderful.
Well, Denise, your appearance in Pretty the Series was absolutely brilliant, and it was so nice to go ahead and see you there. And again, Brett Silverman wrote an absolute fantastic opening to Pretty the Series. And let's just go ahead and listen to the original. This is Brett Silverman with Gumdrop.
There is a unicorn, and his name is Gumdrop. And he lives on Gumdrop Mountain. And he likes to eat jelly bean pizza for breakfast. And he has a magic hula hoop. And his favorite number is 8. which just also happens to be my favorite number. His name is Gumdrop the Unicorn. And then last Tuesday, he died.
Equally absurd, but equally brilliant. Denise, now working with Steve on the Inn, once again, I applaud you. Your role is brilliant as Lola. I have a clip of the Inn. Let's go right to that right now. Don't go away. Back with Steve Silverman and Denise Alexander. Don't go away.
My husband died of cancer.
I love my wife. Where are your husband's ashes? I've been through so much.
His mother took them.
I'm very worried about my wife. Have you taken any of these today? My wife is very ill.
No, I haven't taken anything.
I can't live without her.
This belonged to my son.
I need to find her.
So, where's your son?
Before something else.
My son. I'm tired. Are we done here?
I've been on the road all day. Do you know any place in town that I could spend the night?
Go see Tippy. Tell him Lola sent you.
That's Steve Silverman, The Inn. You can go ahead and check it out at www.thisseriescatchthelakeon.com. Catch the Lake on there. It's the Inn. Denise, this is a great question to ask you. With all of your fantastic experience in daytime television and working now in the web series format, do you find a similarity? Do you find a camaraderie? Do you find that you appreciate one medium over the other?
Not really. They're unique. They're distinct. There's wonderful and difficult about both of them, but difficult to an actor means a different thing than it means to other people. Difficult is good. Difficult is exciting. I find, he said, camaraderie. As I said, Days was great. It was really a family. Hospital, I've been through so many different regimes and changes of cast and producers and writers. But somewhere in there, that what people refer to now as the golden era, I don't think that's true, but it was a great era, certainly. It was wonderful to be there. There were deep and lasting friendships formed, and it was an exciting, exciting ride, and there were and still are such talented people connected with that show. With Steve, having worked with him in Mother's Day and a couple of other theatrical pieces of his, because he's always creating, as well as in Pretty. Well, Pretty gobsmacked me. I mean, I got there. I didn't know what the hell was going on. This was a whole different experience than anything I'd ever had. It was blisteringly fast. It was, I'd sit and watch, and I couldn't figure out what they were doing and how they were doing it, and I'd watch the actors who are doing a kind of comedy, and comedy is my favorite thing in all the world. But as a very famous dying actor once said, dying is easy, comedy is hard. To watch these actors with the style of this, you'd come to the end of every scene, and they would try four different ways to end the scene. And to work with Steve is a very unique and wonderful, a very delicious experience I have found. And it just was so new to me that the first day I went in, I didn't know what was going on. It took me, I was there, I think the first season that I did with Pretty, I had, you know, I had actual little bitty scenes in a couple of shows and then a whole bunch of things sprinkled throughout. And you would go in and you wouldn't know, what were you doing? What was everybody else doing? They would say, you know, this is this and this is going on, go. And you would start acting. And it took me until I was actually doing some of the things that were almost incidental, you know, without any dialogue. And I thought, oh, that's what we're doing here. And you could push, and it was exaggerated, and you could be so free. So that was kind of exciting. Then by the time I came back for the season after that, I felt much more comfortable in what was going on, and I had more lines, which was a very good thing. And then going from there to the inn, and I stand in awe of people like Stacy and Sam, well, everybody. The work that was done on Pretty is... it's so top-notch. It's so terrific. But then to go with Steve to the inn, which, as I'm sure you've talked about with him, is an entirely different feeling. And again, I mean, you know, I was there kind of from the beginning, and he says he wrote Lola for me. I'm not sure that he doesn't say that to any actor he casts as a wonderful sort of bedside
never
manner
trust
thing.
A writer.
Yeah, but I don't care, because I believe he wrote it for me, and I love her so much. But once again, I'm going, what the hell is going on here, a lot of the time. And then I was okay. And then I found her, and I found her voice, and I found her, and she found me. And right now, I've gone back to General Hospital, and I'm taking some of that with me, as I've said before, but I want Steve to know that. And she is strengthening me, and she is mysterious, and the whole thing is so odd and mysterious. And, Steve, I loved the end of that scene. I never told you this, that we just listened to. I loved what I did on that line, and I don't know how I got there. And I loved how you photographed it. And when you said to me, just lean on the counter, I didn't know why you wanted that. I didn't know what I was doing. You just said, do it. I did it. I think it is beyond brilliant. I think that whole show is beyond brilliant, how it's cut together. So, you see, when you're an actor, you love to act. And some experiences can be dreadful. And some experiences, I have to slow down, some experiences can be very challenging. And some experiences can be like, you know, flying with the angels. But
I agree.
To be this lucky, I feel I just have to go through every day saying thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah. Well, no, and thank you for appearing as you did. Like I said, between Pretty the Series and in the series, you're fantastic, Miss Denise. And
you're so kind.
Well, I speak the truth. You know, if you sucked, I would actually go ahead and tell you that. But, you know, quite frankly, and we all have to applaud that Steve Silverman is the mastermind behind this. And we're running out of time, Steve. But I do want to go ahead and remind everybody, go ahead and check out In the Series and Pretty the Series at www.prettytheseries.com. Both shows are there. Check all past episodes. And, Denise, thank you so much for taking the time. I sincerely appreciate you so very much. I look forward to seeing you more in the inn. And I adore you, doll. So it's just that simple.
Well, it's mutual. I had a great time. Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Steve, remind us about Hot as Hell.
Oh, anybody who's interested in Hot as Hell, it's August 16th through 18th here in Palm Springs, California. The series being represented include Pretty, The Inn, Divinity, Fumbling Through the Pieces, and Venice, and all sorts of fun people, including Crystal Chappelle, Joan Van Ark, Michelle Lee, Miss Denise Alexander on the other end of the phone here will be there. It's going to be a great weekend. If you want more information, go to brownpapertickets.com. Brownpapertickets.com. Type in Hot as Hell and grab a super cheap ticket and come on out and spend the weekend with us. We're going to have a ball. We're doing a whole weekend of events. We're going to have so much fun, and there is air conditioning.
Fantastic. Thank you both for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. Denise, once again, a huge love to you. Steve, always a good friend of mine. And whatever you have coming down the hopper, your home is here at Home with Victoria. So huge love to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, you guys. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Be good. We just listened to Steve Silverman and Denise Alexander. I see Raven O is waiting very, very patiently. He's probably mad at me. Ran a little bit over in time. But before we talk to Raven, let's go to a little bit more of his music. This is Raven's new song with My Friend. When we get back, Raven O from the house. Joining us right now is my friend Raven O. Raven, thank you for being so very patient. Denise Alexander was so mesmerizing. Seriously, there's no way I could cut her off. And, you know, she is
legendary.
How are you,
How
my
are
friend?
You? I'm good.
I'm
How are
doing
you
very well. The very first time we had you on was before we even had the capacity to play your music, so I'm happy that we've evolved, and you're evolving so very well, known as the half-naked bad American or bad boy of America, or bad boy of America in London. You've been touring and doing a lot of stuff. Let's start at the very beginning, buddy. Where have you been?
Well, I've been, I was in London for a while, for about 18 months, doing a show there. I opened a venue there and did a show there called The Box, just like the one we have in New York City. And then after that, I opened a show and a venue in Las Vegas called The Act. And as far as I've been touring a lot, I was in Ibiza and went to Moscow and, you know, was in all throughout the United States and, you know, just all over the place, doing a lot of different fun things, you know, Paris. So, you know, it's nice to be back in the United States and back in New York, and I'm going to be up in P-Town in July for the summer doing my show there with Joey Arias.
Yeah, that's very, very exciting. You've been working with Joey for a long time. This is the first time that you've been on stage in more than a decade, though.
Yeah, it's been, we toured together in our show, our cabaret show, for like a long time. And then we had a place on Bedford Street called Bardot for 10 years, our cabaret show there. But we haven't performed together for, over a decade. So now, you know, I wanted to do P-Town because I love P-Town. Provincetown is a really cool place. And I said, well, let me do this. Let's see if Joey's schedule is open. And it was. So we were both very busy, so we never get a chance to work together. So we had this, like, chunk of time free. And so we decided to do it. So it's going to be very exciting. I'm really, really, really excited about it.
Yeah. If you want to go ahead and check out Joey and Raven in action, the YouTube videos are fantastic. Raven O, actually go to youtube.com/Raven O or /Joey Arias. The two of you together have such chemistry. And, you know, I'll be very honest with you. I first met you, I think it was three and a half years, actually, on Facebook, where I think we were, a common friend was Christina Villa. And we went back and forth. And when I clicked on you, of course, it's you with your tattooed, muscled body. You were just off Cirque du Soleil, so everything was all right in place where it should be and stuff. And then I clicked on your music, buddy, and found that your love of jazz standards is so very brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's my favorite music. I mean, I consider myself more of a jazz vocalist than anything else. So, although I do a lot of the genres, a lot of styles, I get hired to do a lot of stuff, everything from jingles to, you know, commercial jingle stuff to, like, singing in rock bands to everything. And, like, I have this little band called Raven and the Pious, and our music is, that music is kind of rock and goth. But my number one love is always in jazz. And I actually consider myself more of a jazz vocalist than anything else, you know, as far as musically.
Oh, absolutely. The song we just played, actually, my friend, I'm hearing very kind of Bowie-esque, David Bowie.
Yeah, the David Bowie.
Am I wrong to go ahead and suggest?
Far as rock and pop, I would say David Bowie is my number one influence as far as that genre of music, more so than anyone else.
Quite brilliant. Quite brilliant. Actually, last a year and a half ago, last summer, I got to catch you at Joe's Pub, which, for all those listening, Joe's Pub, I think, is one of the finest venues in New York City. It is large enough to be grand and small enough to be intimate, and the food's really actually great, too.
It's even better now. It's incredible.
Wow. But your performance there, and actually when I checked out your website, you were actually so kind enough to put up the video that I filmed with you singing the Carpenters song, and which I, like I said, I went with Christina. I had no idea what I was expecting. I was so pleasantly surprised because the talent that you have, especially for the jazz standards, is quite brilliant. Do you plan on staying with that as being your mainstay and just branching off into your own music?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my number one focus is jazz and being, you know, I was doing these other gigs the last 6 years with these other, with this company, doing their shows, like performing in their shows. And, it wasn't jazz, but now I'm done with that. So now I'm refocused and committed to creating, you know, jazz. And as far as my band and all the pop rock stuff, that's, you know, I like doing that as well, but nothing fills me up more than singing those, you know, jazz and that genre of music. So, yeah, my main focus is doing that and really, really, like, focusing on doing more jazz and performing more live. You know, like Joe's College Pieces, you know, shows like that, you know. That's my number one focus right now.
Yeah, it was so funny because we were waiting to see you at Joe's Pub, and then right before that, we went over to Indochine right across the street, and then Joey was sitting there with his bangs, and it was such a magical evening to know that I kind of saw. I never had the guts to walk up to Joey, but I mean, Joey is very, you know it's Joey Arias kind of a thing. So
yeah.
it was so nice to see the both of you in one evening. Let's talk about two. You and Joey were both in a film a while back.
Yes, we were in a film called Flawless.
Flawless, yeah, with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Robert De Niro. Fantastic film. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, would you ever consider actually doing a movie? I mean, with all the stuff that I found out about you and Joey, especially on YouTube and stuff, and I don't know Joey from Adam, and I think Joey's actually in Australia right now, but would you actually consider with you and Joey doing sort of like a little docu-film of your history together?
Well, actually, there is a documentary coming out about Bardot, our cabaret show that we did for 10 years that's actually coming out soon. It's about Bardot. And it's about, you know, that time in our lives that we, as far as just the two of us, we haven't really thought about that. But the Bardot documentary is going to be coming out soon, and I'll be posting all that information online and stuff on my website and stuff, and people can go to that and get that documentary. I mean, it's pretty incredible documentary. I mean, you see, it's 10 years worth of our lives, and you see me from. Oh, goodness, from like now until, you know, when Bardot first almost started. And, I mean, it's very, very intense. And it's very New York, you know, so that's coming out. So that's kind of what we call it. It's almost like a slice of our life together as artists and friends and stuff. So, yeah, you'll get a taste of that when that documentary comes out.
Yeah, I can't wait. Raven, let's go to a little bit more of your new music. This is Raven O with What My Eyes. When we get back, Raven O in the house. Don't go away.
Oh,
with What My Eyes. Check them out at www.raven-o.com. Raven, you've sang with Joey for years and stuff. Is there anyone in the commercial market that you would like to go ahead and team up with for a duet?
Oh, goodness. You mean someone famous?
Honey, in New York and Europe, you're famous. So, yes, someone who's...
Who would I want to... Well, you know, I would probably say that I was the one person that I would love to do a duet with would be... well, just two. David Bowie.
Right.
As far as a male. And as far as a female duet, I would probably want to do a duet with like somebody like Cher or somebody like that, because, you know, two really iconic, intense people I really adore.
Yeah.
And it would be really,
yeah,
really crazy just to do, you know, that. I mean, as far as jazz, I mean, there's like a lot of jazz musicians I would like to work with, but as far as singers, you know, probably Nancy Wilson. You know, I really love Nancy Wilson. And, I mean, I wouldn't say Sarah Vaughan, but she passed away. And
yeah,
so she's gone, but, yeah.
What do you think about the new greats down the pipeline, like the Michael Bublé's and the Adele's?
I think it's great, you know. I mean, it's like, I love Adele. I think Adele's an incredibly talented songwriter and singer, and Michael Bublé, you know what I mean? You know, that music genre of music, you know, the standards and everything, it's important that, you know, people hear those songs, you know, as far as Michael Bublé, you know. So, I mean, he's really popular, and he's, you know, he does what he does, you know. I mean, I'm like, I'm more of a Harry Connick guy myself, you know. And
oh, yes, me too.
Yeah,
the entire soundtrack of When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, you know, I really love Harry Connick, and I also really love, like, you know, like Jimmy Scott, and, you know, and I kind of like into the real, like, and Tony Bennett, all like the real old, older, like, people singing that type of music. You know, Michael Bublé is like, he's very poppy because he's writing his own music now, and I actually really like his original stuff a lot. You know, some of his original songs are really, 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 really good songs. You know, he's very talented.
No, he is, and actually, he is adorable. He's charming. His wife is now, I think, if she's not, well, she was pregnant. That could have been a couple months ago, but yada yada yada. But you have to keep in perfect physical shape especially for performing and stuff like that. Let me ask you a question: is there any guilty pleasures on your iPod that you listen to that no one else should?
Oh my goodness. Guilty pleasures, what would it be? I mean, I have everything on my iPod, you know. I mean, I listen to all kinds of music, so I mean, I think people would be really shocked to know that I really like, let me think, who on my iPod, some people would be like, would laugh at me.
Something that no one would think you would ever listen to.
Do you have
any Bieber on your iPod?
Who, Justin Bieber? No, but Justin Timberlake is on my iPod. But not Justin Bieber. I don't like Justin Bieber's music, but I think he's talented, and I think, you know,
yeah.
I mean, he's a very talented young man, but I don't like his that kind of pop music. But I like Justin Timberlake's music. It's kind of R&B-ish and kind of, you know, I mean, I think he has some really cool songs. You know, but you know, I mean, but no, I wouldn't have Justin Bieber on my iPod. No, oh, actually, I have Rihanna. I think people would be shocked that I would have Rihanna on my iPod.
Oh, there we go. Is that Umbrella?
No, I have S&M.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
No,
yeah.
I understand the whole Bieber thing, too. I would have to say I've listened to maybe two of his songs and stuff. I'm not 11 years old, and I get it. But I do think, and give me your insight on this. Everybody is a Bieber hater or a Bieber believer kind of a thing. I find it so funny that this is a little boy who used to go ahead and post stuff on YouTube, quite frankly, out of his bedroom, and then became a nationwide sensation. The nation actually watched his videos, downloaded his videos over 600 million times, and now are taking him down. Do you think the public actually can build you up then rip you apart?
I don't think it's I think, you know, I think it's kind of like this cycle because the media, they thrive on drama, and they thrive on scandal, you know, as far as, and the public who, there's a lot of people in the public who are really into that. You know, I think, you know, when you're that young, you don't know any better. And then you have a lot of people around you who basically, they're there to make money off of you. You know, I think Justin Bieber is incredibly talented. Like I said, I don't like his music because I'm not into that kind of pop music. I like different genres of pop music. But I would love to hear what he does if he was singing something else. You know, I'm sure he would do a great job singing country music because he has such a beautiful voice and he's very talented.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it's just kind of natural for the public to, they love you one moment and they hate you. I think it has just that whole thing like we want to see you fail. A lot of people want. There's a lot of pessimism and negative energy, you know, around when you see somebody young. Who people think, oh, he just got a lucky break, whatever. And you know, maybe he did. I don't know. I don't know his story, but I just think it's common. You know, they do it to everybody. They did it to Justin Bieber. They did it to Lindsay Lohan. They did it to Miley Cyrus. They've done it to, you know, even if you look as far back as Donny Osmond, when Donny Osmond was a big star, they started ragging on him. It's just kind of that process, the public and the media. Yeah, they love you, and then they want to break you down. Then they want to see you survive. They want to see you come back. It's kind of like that vicious cycle of fame, I think, you know. And when you're so young, you know, he got famous very, very, very young. So it's very difficult because you don't know any better. You know, everyone's telling you, no, you're not going to have any privacy. And you say, oh, yeah, I know, I can take it. But you can't because you have no idea how bad it is until it starts happening, you know. So
no, absolutely.
I feel legit. I really feel for him. You know, I wish people would be a little bit more compassionate and understanding. But then again, you know, the business creates monsters too. You know, you can't.
Yeah, no, I think it's the nature of the beast. And would I be wrong in suggesting that your success has been largely due to your own spirituality? I think a lot of people wouldn't know this about you, but you are a highly spiritual person. And talk to the necessary core beliefs that you find are important.
I think that most, because my core belief is always being to be very straightforward and honest, you know. Mm-hmm. And I try my best not to, you know, hurt people through my actions. I mean, I have because you know I'm human, so I you know, also I'm an artist and I'm very emotional, and I sometimes let my emotions get the best of me. And sometimes, you know, I strike out and I lash out, but it's not below me to apologize and to admit that I'm wrong. You know, I mean, and I always try to be very honest and straightforward with people and kind, you know, and to help people. You know, one of the things I love about my work is that I can employ other people and help other people and, you know, that's a real important part of, you know, when you think about what you do, what I think about what I do as an artist, you know, I'm giving something to people, you know, whatever it may be, you know, a moment, whether it be like a 1 minute of like relief or, you know, or fantasy or whatever it may be for them to forget maybe their bad day or something, or maybe remember something that was painful that will help them process something. You know, that's what I do with my work. And on the other side of that, the business side of that, you know, I know that because of what I do, I can help people with their lives. You know, I can employ musicians, I can, you know, lighting people, costume people, and through my work, you know, I know I'm helping people with their family because I'm very family oriented. I'm very, very about family. I'm a homebody, so I like the idea of family and I like the idea of community. You know, although I'm very you know, I'm kind of a loner, you know, and introverted. I'm very much connected to that, you know. I'm, you know, you spoke of spirituality and all that, so I don't get too deep into trying to figure out those things, or I just kind of let it flow naturally, you know, because, you know, I come from, you know, my background is Hawaiian, so I'm part Hawaiian, and so I try to make everything as natural as possible. I go sort of live by, you know, with my instincts and my gut feeling. Then I just think it's important that, you know, we don't hurt people, you know, and we be honest with them and, we'd be fair with them, and we'd be, you know, real, you know, that word real. You know, I think a lot of people who know me would say that, yeah, Raven's very real. To a fault sometimes, maybe. I don't know.
Well, honey, you have to be to survive this long as you have in this industry. Once again, we're talking with Raven O. Teaming up with, again, after more than a decade, Joey Arias, actually at the Art House in Providence, Massachusetts, July 6th through September 2nd for their show Wanted Live. Buddy, you know what? I'm actually in New York Monday night. I'm going to go ahead and cover Miss Sybil Brunchen at her little bingo thing.
Oh, my God.
Down on Hudson Street. Oh, yeah. I haven't met her.
I'm going to be in P-Town. I leave for P-Town for the summer on Friday. I'm actually going up this Friday to, you know, be there.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Buddy, we're running out of time. I'm going to wish you and Raven, you and Joey, the most success up in P-Town. I'm so sorry we couldn't get Joey on. But, buddy, thank you so much for being as patient
as you
were. I really appreciate it. I love your music, and we'll have coffee sometime up in New York, okay?
Let's do it. Let's definitely do it. You have my number.
I got your number, baby. You take care, and again,
baby.
Huge love, buddy. Love you a ton.
Take care.
You take care. That was Raven O. You can go ahead and check him out at www.raven-o.com. I want to thank all my guests tonight. Steve Silverman from The Inn. Check it out at www.prettytheseries.com. Starring the fantastic queen of daytime television, Denise Alexander. And Raven O. Check him out at raven-o/0.com. I want to thank all of us up in chat tonight. So many guests came and left. My call up, my brother from another mother, my M. Stegan from Lethbridge. Girls Not Fighting, guest 2475, guest 2491, guest 2476, guest 2432. Thank you for listening to another edition of At Home with Victoria. We're back next week with the lovely and the absolutely brilliant. Who do we have next week? Just want to go ahead and check. I'll figure it out next week. Anyways, thanks for joining us. Mike, my brother from another mother, thanks for going ahead and manning chat tonight. We're going to end with a little bit more music from Raven O. This is Raven O with Both Sides Now. For At Home with Victoria, I'm Michael Kay. Don't go away. And thank you and good evening.
Ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow. Clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds' illusions I call. I really don't know clouds at all. Dizzy dancing where you feel as if a fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way, and now it's just another show. You leave them laughing when you go, and if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now. somehow, some give and take, and still somehow, if love's illusions are gone, I really don't know love at all. Tears and fears and feeling proud to say I love you and I'm loved, and dreams and schemes and circus crowds. I've looked at life that way, and now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads, they say I've changed. Something's lost, but something's gained in living every day. I've looked at life from both sides now, from win and lose, but still somehow it's life's illusions. I really don't know life.
Been listening to At Home with Victoria, an interactive news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Download us on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. I'm Shelly Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.